Welcome to Around the Wheel with Brett Jackson. In today's show, we have Rich Waffelmacher. Rich rides an Africa Twin, and what we're going to be talking about today, he's been camping for about 10 years on his bike. We're going to talk about what is ADV really now, what is camping all about on these big bikes, but most important, we're going to close this out, we're going to talk about tools and tricks and some things that are going to really make your next trip or your next adventure trip much better. Welcome, Rich, to Around the Wheel. All right, Rich, so you ride.
I have a 2018 Honda Africa Twin Adventure Sport, and then I have a 2005 Honda CRF 450X.
And the X, is that set up for dual sporting or just dirt biking?
Just dirt biking here in California. Yeah, I can't get it street legal. So the next bike is a KTM 350 EXCF, which will be street legal.
And you got into adventure riding because of camping, right?
Riding motorcycles really is my passion. I really, truly enjoy it. My friends camp off their bikes, and that's when I got intrigued by camping off the motorcycle. It's just something I really enjoy to do.
It's funny, when I met Christina, my wife, she was a student at the Tour Tech Rally back in 2013. It was the same thing. She'd been hiking. She likes camping. She likes being out. And she goes, "You mean I can go out and do all this and not carry it on my back?" And that was her first realization. And then she met me. I was heading back in the same direction as she was. And I'm like, "We're right on the Washington BDR if you want to follow me." So she joined me. And when I was up there, I did the whole gourmet thing. I had potatoes and broccoli and steak. And I had a nice full bottle of red wine. And apparently at that point, she bought in 100%. But she realized you can really luxury on these. Obviously, we can go over the top, but the way to just sit there and enjoy it and have a wonderful meal and some wine and watch the sunsets, it was just, it's an incredible thing. And that's what kind of leads us into what we wanted to talk about, which is defining adventure and what it takes to make an adventure happen. And that was kind of the topic that you said, let's chat about just adventure.
I tell my friends that you don't have to go to Africa to have an adventure. We can just do it right here in our backyard. I'm fortunate to live in Southern California where you can ride a lot and there's plenty of open desert. The mountains just as well. And we've had great weekend trips. I just encourage people to not save up all that time and put away for some big, has to be an epic trip. Just go out and do it. And you'll find that you have a great time.
Also, you have to break things in. That's how you learn your bike, how you learn the techniques, how you learn what equipment works and what doesn't. If you're not out testing it, using it, and taking advantage of it, because one of the things I bring up to people all the time, and I am putting tours together for Nepal, and I say trying because COVID has put us off by almost 2 years now. When I'm looking at these, I'm always looking at the timing because the majority of us really do have mortgages, jobs, families, wives, dogs, things that keep us from doing these epic multi-year adventures. And it sounds great and looks great on video, but the realities of spending months or years on end, it's a change in lifestyle and a very significant change in lifestyle that I don't think people always realize.
And it's hard to give up your lifestyle that you have, that you've created over so many years, that house that you've paid for, and to give it up to say, "I'm going to go live a dream on a motorcycle." I can tell you that I can't, but I also go out on 3 to 4 trips a year that are using California down to Baja, Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, and I have a great time. I can keep the balance between both, which I think is important.
One of the things I love about doing the podcast is that I'm not out looking for the experts in the industry. And part of the reason I do that is they often lose sight of reality. And I think when we travel, we get sucked in on, well, I have to have the Ducatis or the BMWs. I mean, when you're talking a BMW, which is nearly a GSA, by the time you get out of the dealer, we're talking a $30,000 motorcycle in reality.
Yeah.
And that's big. That's a big deal. And you don't have to do that. You can go camping on a $2,000 bike with far less and have a great time, possibly a much better time.
My first adventure bike was a $2,000 KLR 650. You know, I kept building that bike up and I had a lot of fun on it. My buddies were on KTMs and the 990 Adventures, and they were always faster than me. But every time they turned around, there I was. I was still out there camping with them and having fun. Eventually, I actually went out and bought all the climb full gear, and the guys were making fun of me. They said, "You know, Rich, your jacket and your pants are worth more than your motorcycle." But I'm out here. So,
From my perspective, that's exactly what I tell riders to do. I think it's far more important to have the right gear where they're comfortable, where they're safe. In the camping gear, start off with a bike that you don't care about as much and make sure that you're taken care of first, because you're going to have fun, whether it's a $2,000 KLR. In fact, when I did Baja, the first couple of years I started going down to Mexico, I did it for about 6 years straight. The other guy that rode with me had a KLR 650, and I was on an F800 GS. I remember looking and thinking, he can throw that bike over the edge of the cliff, look over, shrug his shoulders and go, well, that sucks, and walk home. And I'm looking at my Beamer going, this is a significant investment. And you worry about it and you're concerned about it. And even in Africa, I had an inexpensive, over 10-year-old Yamaha 600 XE600. It's a lot like a DR650. And at any point in time, if I had been injured, had to fly out, I never would have looked back. And I knew I could leave that bike at the airport, get on the plane, fly home, and save money over flying over my Triumph Tiger, which is what I had at home at the time. Mm-hmm. I think people lose that perspective.
I agree. Brett, one of the things I call set down speed is my best speed that I like to ride. And set down speed, what that is to me, is that I'm sitting down on the motorcycle and now I'm looking around. I'm really enjoying the scenery. And as soon as I get on that bigger, badder, faster bike, I start standing up. I start going faster because the bike can go faster. It can do more. It's more capable. And now I'm not seeing as much as what's around me because I want to ride the bike to its potential. A bike like a KLR 650, it's a set down speed bike. And you sit down and you start enjoying it more. So I got just as much enjoyment out of the KLR riding that as I do the Africa Twin or any other bigger bike. So
it does boil down to our passion. I'm back onto a 1200 GS, a used bike. I like buying used bikes, and you know the KTM's been giving me fits. But one of the things I miss about the GS is when I'm riding down one of these trails, and you come across some other riders on far more appropriate and capable motorcycles, is the looks on their face. Like, are you, and we've been asked straight up, are you lost? and that makes us happy. And I think that's the point you're bringing up, is when we look at adventure and we define adventure. And adventure, I think, has been a stolen term. I've brought this up years ago on another podcast, that the original title adventure, as far as I can look back, really had to do with a way to clearly define the difference between a dual sport rider, which most of us are, even though we're on adventure bikes, we're really dual sport riding, going out for the weekend or a couple of weeks, we're riding gravel roads, dirt roads, pavement to get there, and kind of short trips, as opposed to the overlander, which generally was extended trip, a lot of times international trips, and long distance, long-term travel. And it was overlanding on two wheels. And that's where adventure seemed to come from, as far as I could tell. And it, obviously, it's sort of been captured. And for a while, it just meant really big dual sport. And dual sport's kind of lost phase all the way across. And pretty much anything that's a dual sport now seems to fall under this adventure category, where they're going, hey, this 300's a 300 adventure bike. They used to just call them dual sports.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we have to remember, is that adventure is not defined by the motorcycle. It's not defined even by the magazines, or somebody like me or you. It's defined by the rider, the person in the saddle.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you could go out on just a trail right off the mountains and hit another trail that you've never been on, and you get back and you get that euphoria of like, I just explored something new. It's something new to you, but that was an adventure.
All right, Rich. So how long have you been doing adventure riding or dual sporting now?
I think about 10 or 12 years, I believe, somewhere around there. I've been riding for about 40 years.
Okay, so you're very seasoned, both as a rider and as a dual sporter. If somebody's just getting into this, or they, because this happens to me all the time, people get in, they take the adventure camps, they do a couple of camping trips, and they're just, they don't even know where to start. What kind of gear do they need? Obviously, we usually grab our car camping gear or our backpacking gear, because that's what we have, and we throw it on the bike, and we're usually overloaded, and off we go, because we don't know what to leave behind yet. What are some of the tips that you've figured out over the years? Is just a guy who likes to do, and your trips are what, about a week?
Yeah, typically, yeah.
Okay, so you're taking a week. You're doing northern Mexico or Baja Peninsula. You're going to Arizona out of California, and you're just taking a week trip. What are some of your best tips that you've picked up over the years?
Well, first, I guess you don't necessarily need the lightest weight gear to go to REI and you can buy some very expensive lightweight gear, lightweight tents, and they're going to cost you a lot more. And it's not necessary to do that. Lightweight gear sometimes is not as durable. So I'm okay with the REI brand tent. I typically take a one-man tent because a two-man tent is just too big. It's nice to have a size once you're in it, but it's that much more to load. I take a small jet boil with me to boil water. I have always have something for breakfast in the morning. And I'll typically bring the camping meals. But many times you're not far from civilization. You have to get gas. And because you're on a motorcycle, town's usually only 20, 30 minutes away, an hour away. So you're going to eat food along the way. You're not going to starve. You don't have to overpack on your food. You can always stop at gas stations and get little items for the day. There's going to be grocery stores in every town you go through. So you don't have to overthink. And that is one hurdle that I've gotten over. The more I ride, the more I do it, I realize that it's not that big of a deal. People eat everywhere. People have clothes everywhere. If you forget a t-shirt, just buy a t-shirt on the road.
I'm nodding, and you can't see this, but I am nodding with a big nod the whole time you're talking about this, because it's exactly the same thing. And I did exactly the same thing everybody else did. My first trip down to Baja, I'm like, oh my God, I'm crossing international borders. Canada doesn't count. This is going to be great. And I'm packing all my food with me, and I've got all my camping food, and I've got all my equipment. And I get down there and I'm like, you know, I can buy tacos on the side of the road for nothing.
Yep.
And there's stores there. People have to eat. Yes, I often pack and I bring a full kitchen because I enjoy cooking and having a gourmet meal up on a mountaintop. But other times, like you, if I'm going to go to a BDR in Utah and I'm only camping for a few nights or even 5 nights, I might just bring enough to make coffee in the morning, a stop in town. Like you said, you're going to pass through fuel every day. You're going to pass through a town every day, probably multiple times. I can grab a sandwich and put it in the bike, or grab some fruit and put it on the bike. And for me, I'm always going to eat steak or something like that because I enjoy it. But I don't have to worry about how to pack it. I pick it up midday. It's beef. It's not like fish. It's not going to go bad. I throw it on the bike, and then that night I cook it up. I think that's how we help offset the other suggestion you made, which is you don't have to have the lightest gear, depending how you like to travel. If you want to do a lightweight 250, 300 cc dual sport adventure ride, you might want to pack as light as possible. There's a tremendous amount of fun by going light. On the other side, maybe you want to be totally luxury and you're driving around a behemoth, you know, short of an RV. And most of us are probably going to land somewhere in the middle. And that's the whole balance of how much is that weight becoming a hindrance? How much does it cut into the fun? How much risk do you associate with that weight? And what are you willing to leave behind and what are you willing to have? And no, you don't have to pack for around the world. And even traveling around the world, I don't pack food anymore. I think that's what people have to balance. You even brought up the tent. You carry a one-man tent. If you go to Alaska where weather's really bad, you might be tenting majority of the time by choice, then having a large tent like a Redverse or a Lone Rider tent or something like that may make a lot more sense for you because you're living in that tent and you need that shelter. And a one-man tent would be miserable.
Yeah. I found a couple times where we were stopping at gas stations and getting a sandwich like you had mentioned. That's when you start to meet the people too, because you're sitting in the parking lot at the gas station and people start looking at you. They're like, wow, that is cool. Those guys are out camping on the motorcycle. And then you'll have someone come over and talk to you and they'll tell you about, have you guys been to this local abandoned mine, or have you been up that dirt road yet, or have you done this or done that? And if you stand there and talk to the people and listen, you'll find stuff that you never knew about. People are nice. So when you're in the community, at the gas station, eating your sandwich in the parking lot, it gives you an opportunity to meet the local people, which is part of the fun.
There you go. Taking away one of my best tips, which is don't overplan your trip. Listen to people, you know, listen to their recommendations or suggestions, what to avoid, what to add into your trip. For me, one of my tips, if I was going to share, is get away from the finish line mentality.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Our trips, when I first started doing this, I would spend a week and a half planning out GPS routes and okay, we're going to go this way and here's this and here's that. We've never used it. We would get out there, we would camp the first night, when we all wake up the next morning and go, oh, where do you want to go? Oh, I don't know. Weather looks good over there. Let's just go that direction. And that's the best way to go because we did what we wanted to do. We're on vacation. So we get to go where we want to go. There's no finish line because we're just out to have fun. And we've seen some great places because of that. And sometimes you get a little lost. I mean, I know where I'm at all the time, but am I really lost? No, by the end of the day, we figure it out and we all get out of there and we have a good time. And it's part of the deal.
What is that old phrase? Not all those that wander are lost.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
We explore, we're discovering, we're having fun. We have GPS to get us out if we get a little off course somewhere or things are dangerous. But no, I'm 100% with you. And again, it all depends on how you define adventure. I'm much like you. If I do a BDR, all that does is give me a starting point and a suggested route. But if weather's bad and I go around a section, or if I really enjoy a section, I do it twice, or if I just get a little sidetracked and end up going someplace completely different than where I thought I was going, there's nothing wrong with that. That's what it's all about. That, for me, that is the adventure. It's the discovery. It's the just having fun and going with the flow. For others, it's the finish line. They want to go. I question South America. I remember being asked on a very regular basis, and almost always Americans, are you going all the way to Terra del Fuego? Are you going to make it to Ushuaia? And my answer was always, I don't know. I have this much time I can take off. I have this much money, and there's this much land between here and there. One of those is going to run out, and whichever one runs out first, that's when I come home. And I ended up making it down and back, but it wasn't my goal. It wasn't my intent. I just sort of ended up there as opposed to I'm going to make it. And if I didn't make it, I'm a failure. I don't care. I just went for the experience.
One time I saw you at a show, the IMS show in Long Beach, and I asked you a question. You gave me a tip on what to bring camping, and it worked for me. I would like to share a couple things that I bring with me. Now I've streamlined it enough to kind of figure out how not to overpack. The tip you gave me was to, I now carry what I call like a camping shirt. It's a shirt that has a collar on it. It's long sleeve. They don't get wrinkled and stuff. But at the end of the day, when I go into the restaurant, I put that shirt on. I get out of my motorcycle gear. You know, you put on your camping pants and all that and some different shoes, but you put on a collared shirt and all of a sudden you kind of fit in a little more with everybody else. You don't look like quite the dirt bag. May not be a good term, but and it's too hot, you roll up sleeves. It's too cold, you roll them down, and it works for me. But I also bought some packing cubes. On the outside of the cube, I write shirts on it, for example, with a Sharpie marker. If I'm going on a 5-day trip, I'm taking one shirt with me when I get on the motorcycle. I'll bring two other t-shirts and that one camping shirt I just said. I'll wear t-shirts more than one day. I can always wash them in the shower or wash them in the sink if it gets too bad. You let them air out, and at the end of the day, I put on that camp shirt. T-shirts are getting aired out. They feel better the next day. But the packing cube for me, by marking it with shirts and then socks, before I was taking all my stuff, throwing it in one stuff sack, and then I go to get a t-shirt out, and I'm making a mess out of everything, trying to find my t-shirts when I pulled out my socks, my underwear, and everything else that I was packing along. So the packing cubes are very helpful for me.
What brand are you using?
Amazon.
Okay. I've used the Eagle Creek, and then I've got some others now, some other brands that have come in. Some I think are just a generic Amazon brand. But to add on to that, you have the labeling, and I haven't done that. I like that idea. What I always did is I did colored cubes, and I would look in and I would have different colors. So I have red, blue, black, and I would know that red, because I always think of warmth. Red is all my insulation, my Gore-Tex liners, my sweater, anything, my hat, anything that's going to keep me warm, that's in the red bag. And then my blue bag was my basic clothing. It was a two-sided bag. So one side was clothes. The other side was for dirty. So you could flip it over and so the same bag held all the same clothes, but one side was clean, one side wasn't. Mm-hmm. And black would be something else. And so I did by color. So if I reach down, I just see the color, know what's in the bag. Same sort of idea. Now I have a lot of black bags and I use zip ties, and I'll take colored zip ties and put a colored zip tie on the handle. I do the same thing with my camera gear, because many of them are like the GoPro bags that come with the GoPros, but I don't keep one GoPro in each bag. One's mounts, one's GoPros, one's the mic and everything else. And I put a zip tie on the handle. So as I look down, I can go, oh, the green zip tie is, the red zip tie is, the black zip tie, the white zip tie. That's a wonderful way to organize your stuff so you don't end up with a huge mess of gear salad in your panniers.
Yeah, I've done that. You have a better memory than I do then, Brett, because I have tried the color coding thing and I get there and I'm like, okay, the orange one was for what again? So I end up having to go through all the different colors anyway. So the writing on it was the only way that I could get beyond that.
You have to open up your bag and then you have to pull out the sheet of paper with the, okay, let's see, orange is, wait, double stripe orange is.
Yeah. Have you been watching me when I'm camping or something?
Well, you know, I did the same thing for tools though. When I pull my toolkit out, I put a stripe on them with rim tape. So I have one kit that's red. And Christina's bike, hers has a red and a white stripe on it. The KTM, of course, has orange on it. And so each bike, if I pull the tools out, if they get mixed up, or if you and I are on the side of the road and you're like, man, I can't find this tool or I need two of them, I can pull my tools out. And when we mix up the tools, trying to fix the issue, when we're done, I just grab everything with a stripe on it and throw it in my tool bag. And I know it's all there. I definitely like the labeling, the color coding, those different ideas. Although I never thought about carrying a menu for my color code. Maybe a
good idea. Something else that I bring with me, I even bring this on just a day ride, is a tarp. You can buy it at REI or Amazon, and they'll label it as a safety blanket / tarp. So this particular one that I bought, on one side it's orange, and on the other side it's that silver reflective material. For a day ride, I was with a friend. Unfortunately, he crashed and he was sitting on the side of the road and the pavement was hot and he couldn't get up. We were waiting for an ambulance to come. But in the meantime, he's getting hot and we had to give him water, but I held the tarp up and we used that as a place for shade for him, to shade him from just the sun bearing down on him. I have used the same tarp when I'm changing a tire on the side of the road or having to remove a fuel tank off a KTM 990. We have to pull the fuel pump out. And you have parts all over the place in the 7-Eleven parking lot. That tarp is a clean spot. You can put stuff down and also identify things, and it doesn't kind of roll away. It's a spot to work on. This same tarp also works for me to put it underneath my tent. So it's my footprint from my tent, but it's a little bit bigger than the tent. So as I enter the tent under the vestibule, there's a clean area where the tarp's sticking out, and I can take my shoes off there and put them on without getting dirt on my socks and everything else. I'm climbing in and out. So that's one thing I always bring with me that I like.
I think you bring up a bigger point here that I want to really make clear to anybody that's listening to us. And that is, you do have to pack things with you that you hope you don't use. Often when I look at my packing on the bike, probably close to 50% of what I have is stuff I hope I don't use. It's the spare inner tubes, it's the tools, it's the first aid kit, it's these items like what you're mentioning that if things don't go as planned, you know, I hope I never need my air pump, but I carry an air pump. And I carry these things with me because if something goes bad, I need it. And I do keep in mind, I'm in the US, if I'm traveling to the US, if there's a dealer, probably not too far away. But when you're up on a trail, or you're 15 miles from the nearest paved road and you don't have cell service, you are in the wilderness. You are still 15 miles away from paved road, never mind where help might be. And we do have to think about, how do we get ourselves off of this mount? What would I need to do that? What tools, what sort of fix-it stuff? And then how do I make that compact so I don't laden my bike with so much weight and so many materials that I can't ride it against that? This is like putting armor on the bike. You can make your bike impenetrable. There's no way you're gonna break and throw it off a cliff, but then it weighs so darn much that you fall down more often. You get quagmired into the mud. I mean, like the video I did with me in the mud. I mean, had I done that on 300, I'd pop over the log. On the 790, I might have made it over the log. On the 1200, I knew my chances were almost zero to make it over that log.
Yeah.
But I still gave it a shot because why not? I'm not that far from home. There was a road not too far away. It was a place to do that. What a great opportunity to share with others how to work through the mental process of getting out of that. But certainly, I know when I'm out riding, part of the reason I picked up that KTM was it's more capable. I can do things on that bike. I can develop skill sets on the bike I can't do on the 1200. But also, I'm amazed how much weight I even had on that KTM in the back for tools and toe straps or just the little things that it, when I hit the dirt bike trails where it really wasn't that far away, when I removed all that, how much weight actually came off the bike and how much more fun it was. So that balance, I think that's part of adventure riding. Adventure riding is not dirt biking. Adventure riding isn't even necessarily that dual sport. It's that travel. It's that going out and discovering and wandering and not being on a perfect plan. The adventure starts when the plan falls apart. And often it falls apart before you get out of the driveway.
Very true. Yeah. We talk about tools to bring with us and stuff. And one of the best tools, as we both know, is using your brain. You know, I've been in a couple situations where you're sitting there and the bike won't start, or in Mexico, my brother's rear tire nearly came off the bike because all the spokes came loose. I'm riding up behind him, and over the intercom, they say, "Hey, stop. It looks like you have a flat tire." I pull up next to him, and I squeeze his tire, and tire has air in it. So then I shake the tire, and the tire rim is now shaking, and the hub is staying still. It took us 45 minutes, and I had the tools, but we had both had the wherewithal to set down. We got the tarp out, and we thought about what we're going to do, and we both talked about it, and then slowly started working on it, and we were able to relace a rim on a dirt road in Baja. We got back to the hotel that night, and we were able to take a look at it, and to this day, he still uses that same rim laced up like we did on the dirt road. He's never had to fix it again. But just stop and think about what you have around you, what you have between the two of you, and think everything out before you just jump right into something or give up completely, because there's a solution.
That is the best wrap-up I could come up with. The most important tool is our mind, is the knowledge we bring with us. Being prepared, being able to work on that motorcycle if something goes wrong. You've brought up if there is a medical issue, having the not just the basic first aid knowledge of going online or doing a Red Cross, but having backcountry first aid knowledge and knowing what to do and having things and knowing what you have in your kit that you can double up. If you have a tent, you may not need the tarp because you have other shelter you can throw up. And I've used emergency tents. But it's the mental aspect. And I always end by saying, remember to smile while you ride, because attitude matters. And that's a mental thing, because I firmly believe that the mental attitude, the knowledge we bring with us, is the most important tool that's out there. And it's keeping a calm head when things don't go well. It's being prepared as well as you can be prepared before you head out. If you let your attitude slip, if you forget to smile, when you are working on that KTM and the fuel pump is busted and you're on the side of the trail, where you do go up on the trail and you find out it's washed out, when you pull out your tent and you realize it's rubbed a hole in it because you're new to adventure riding and you packed it wrong, and now you have a big gaping hole in a rainstorm. If you forget that you did that on purpose, that this is the whole point of adventure, this is the whole idea of going out, then things get worse from there. And we always need to remember, smile while you ride, because attitude really does matter.
No, I agree. It's I have a good group of guys that I ride with, and we all have that same attitude you're talking about, that we can figure things out and we'll keep moving along, and the trip's going to work out no matter how sideways they have gone in the past, and we'll make the best of it and we'll have a good time.
This is going to be one of the best podcasts. One of the most valuable things that comes out of doing these podcasts are when I can get somebody who's just a rider, not an industry guy. And I really mean that. When I can get somebody that just shares their epiphanies, their learning moments, their tips, what makes me a great educator isn't just my way of presenting information, but I listen. And every time I go to one of these adventure camps, I learn. Because everybody comes in, they all have stories, they all have products, they all have lessons they've learned, and they share them. And what I become is a conduit of information. I'm not the guy that comes up with all of it. I either take it, I process it, I share it, I pass it on. And when I do make this offer to people to go, "Hey, would you like to be part of this? Do you have any questions you have? Do you want to cover anything? Or do you have anything you'd like to share?" Almost everybody has the exact same response. "Well, Brett, I don't really think I have much to offer. I'm just a rider, and I don't do this for a living, and I just go out on the weekends, and every single person comes out with something that's just really useful for everybody else. That perspective, I think, is valuable. And that's what I really want this podcast to be. I want it to be about writers and what we all deal with, not things that are beyond reach and beyond comprehension.
I support you on Patreon because what you just said, you're doing this for the community and it helps us all.
This is going to be fantastic.
Well, good. I'm glad that I could help, and I had something worthy of bringing to the table.
Thanks for listening to Around the Wheel with Rich and myself. I hope we provided you with some ideas, some tips, maybe some reinforcement. Often the best lessons we learn is not the new information, but just the reminders of the things we've forgotten. Please tune in 2 weeks for the next podcast. Remember, all of this is supported through Patreon. So if you've really enjoyed this podcast, please consider becoming a Patreon supporter if you're not already one. And if you can't afford it, then please continue to tune in, learn and share, and let's make this a safer and a better industry and sport for everybody. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, it's Around the Wheel with Brett Tax and Rich Loffelmacher.